I warned him that I had the scissors. When I initially pulled them out, I said, I have a weapon and I will use it. And he still decided to attack me. If I wasn't going to get shanked by a white person in the men's prison, I could have got shanked by a white person in the women's prison. Some people say the system is broken, and it's not broken. It's doing exactly what it's created to do.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The UN removes Russia from its Human Rights Council, Taipei Pride praises Taiwan's marriage proposal, and a black U.S. trans activist shares her story of survival. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michael Lebeau.
And I'm Sarah Sweeney.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending November 5th, 2016. Russia lost its seat on the United Nations Human Rights Council this week to Hungary and Croatia. Vladimir Putin's regime has come under increasing scrutiny in recent years over its human rights abuses, especially against sexual and gender minorities. Putin pushed for and signed a national law in 2013 that outlaws the dissemination of vaguely defined gay propaganda. The so-called No Promo Homo law has been used to shut down all pro-LGBT public events, including pride celebrations. Russia was running for re-election to the Human Rights Council in a three-way race for the two seats available to the Eastern European bloc. In a secret ballot by the entire UN General Assembly, Hungary received 144 votes, and Croatia got 114 votes for the second seat to narrowly beat out Russia's 112. According to the New York Times, it's the first time a permanent member of the United Nations Security Council has lost a seat on the Human Rights Council, which was established in 2006 to strengthen the promotion and protection of human rights. Reuters reported that there was also behind-the-scenes lobbying against Russia's candidacy because of its military support for the Syrian regime of Bashar al-Assad. Nevertheless, other countries with poor human rights records won seats on the council. Saudi Arabia led the balloting in the Asian region, securing a seat alongside Iraq and China.
Meanwhile, BuzzFeed News reported late this week that the recently created LGBT rights watchdog position at the UN could be eliminated before the end of the coming week. The position is formally known as a special rapporteur, who's mandated to monitor violence and discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. The office was created in June by the Human Rights Council. In September, the council's president announced that the post would be filled by Weetit Mantapan, a Thai law professor who has previously served as special rapporteur on North Korea. The resolution to undo the LGBT rights watchdog position was introduced in the General Assembly by Sierra Leone on behalf of the Group of African States. It proposes to defer consideration of the creation of the post in order to allow time for further consultations to determine its legal basis. Opponents of LGBT rights, particularly from Africa and the Middle East, insist that sexual orientation and gender identity issues are not covered by international law. The resolution is scheduled for a vote by the entire UN General Assembly on November 8th. It only needs a simple majority, or 97 votes, to pass. A U.S. diplomat who spoke to BuzzFeed on the condition of anonymity called the vote hard to predict.
A record crowd of more than 80,000 people celebrated LGBT Pride in Taipei on October 29th. They were also celebrating the government's introduction on October 24th in Taiwan's legislature of one of three bills relating to civil marriage equality, which is supported by President Tsai Ing-wen. She was elected in January and made marriage equality one of the cornerstones of her campaign. The rainbow flag flew over Taipei City Hall for the first time to coincide with the Pride March. Legislators and key figures from all three major political parties marched in the parade. Each party, including the ruling Democratic Progressive Party, has introduced a marriage equality-related bill. The opening of civil marriage to same-gender couples in Taiwan would be a first in Asia. But more than 2,000 phone calls linked to the Protect Family Alliance, a coalition of conservative religious groups opposed to civil marriage equality, clogged the Taipei city government's hotlines to condemn the march. The self-identified Defender of Family Values group calls homosexuality a curable disease. Pride organizers called their phone call gambit a huge waste of government resources.
In other news, Texas has led 7 other Republican-dominated U.S. states and 1 far-right northeastern U.S. governor in a joint friend-of-the-court brief supporting Mississippi's so-called religious freedom law, thought to be the most blatantly anti-LGBT U.S. state law in recent memory. Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant signed the Religious Liberty Accommodations Act in April. Known as HB 1523, it allows anti-LGBT discrimination in any employment-related decision and any decision concerning the sale, rental, or occupancy of a dwelling, as long as that bias is based on sincerely held religious belief or moral conviction. The law specifies 3 such beliefs: that only heterosexual couples can marry, that sex is only permissible within heterosexual marriage, and that gender is immutable and determined at birth. Joining Texas in the friend of the court brief at the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals are Arkansas, Louisiana, Nebraska, Nevada, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Utah, and Maine's righter-than-right governor, Paula Page.
The Mississippi law was overturned by U.S. District Court Judge Carlton Reeves as unconstitutional in late June, literally hours before it was scheduled to take effect. Mississippi's Democratic Attorney General Jim Hood has refused to appeal that ruling, so Governor Bryant has hired private attorneys to represent the state in that effort. Some of them work for Alliance Defending Freedom, an Arizona-based conservative Christian legal group that helped write the measure. HB 1523 is among more than 100 anti-LGBT bills that have been considered in more than 20 Republican-controlled state legislatures across the country following the June 2015 U.S. Supreme Court civil marriage equality ruling.
Elsewhere, the government in the Australian state of Queensland continues to advance LGBT rights. As our correspondent John Frame in Brisbane reported, age of consent laws involving consensual gay sex were made equal to those covering heterosexual sex last month after a 16-year campaign. And this week, although the vote was close, Queensland lawmakers passed a measure to allow same-gender couples to adopt children. The speaker cast the deciding vote. The new law also allows single people and couples undergoing fertility treatment to adopt. Opponents claim that there was an insufficient demand for adoption in the state, and by implication, that opening adoption to same-gender couples could deny some heterosexual couples an adoptive child. But Industrial Relations Minister Grace Grace spoke to Parliament as the mother of an adopted daughter during 90 minutes of sometimes heated debate. "We should be encouraging more Queenslanders to adopt children," she argued, "where they have a clear desire and a demonstrated ability to raise children in a loving family environment. That's exactly what I have done as the mother of a beautiful, wonderful, and absolutely loved adopted daughter," she added, "and it's what many other Queenslanders want to do." South Australia and the Northern Territory are now the only parts of Australia where lesbian and gay couples are not allowed to adopt.
And finally, a pioneering lesbian astronaut and a record-shattering out-gay Olympian were each honored in the U.S. this week. The U.S. Navy commissioned the research vessel Sally Ride in the port of San Diego, California, on October 28th. The 238-foot-long ship will be operated by the Scripps Institution of Oceanography, where the scientist, teacher, and innovator worked for many years. The ship is designed to investigate Earth's oceans in an effort to solve some of the planet's environmental challenges. The research vessel Sally Ride is also the first Navy ship to be named for a woman. Ride, the first American woman in space, acknowledged her sexuality and decades-long relationship with Tam O'Shaughnessy in the obituary she authorized that was published soon after her death in 2012.
And if you enjoy watching the colorful Rose Parade in Pasadena, California, as part of your New Year celebrations, keep an eye out for one of the 3 Olympian Grand Marshals. Multi-medal diving champ Greg Louganis will join fellow Olympic medalists Janet Evans and Allison Felix to lead the flowered procession down Colorado Boulevard on January 2nd. Louganis is thought to be the first proudly out LGBT person to be a Rose Parade Grand Marshal. He's considered the greatest American male Olympic diver of all time. He competed at the 1976 Games in Montreal, the 1984 Games in Los Angeles, and the 1988 Games in Seoul. With 5 total medals, 4 of them gold, he was the first man to sweep both diving categories in consecutive Olympics. Louganis came out publicly in 1995, married his husband, Johnny Shalia, in 2013, and as an HIV-positive gay man, is a tireless advocate for LGBT rights and HIV/AIDS awareness. He said he hopes his being named a Rose Parade Grand Marshal this week inspires people and that they know they are loved. The theme of the upcoming 128th Tournament of Roses Parade is Echoes of Success.
That's News Wrap for the week ending November 5th, 2016. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Sarah Sweeney.
And I'm Michael Lebeau.
The Australian Senate on November 7th hammered the final nail into the coffin of a proposed national plebiscite on civil marriage equality. Legislation to enable the non-binding but mandatory public vote on the issue passed in the House, but as expected, it's been defeated in the Senate by a vote of 33-29. Labor, the Greens, and some key independent MPs combined to shoot down the proposal of Liberal Party Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull's coalition government. Critics, including a significant majority of the public in national opinion polls, want a marriage equality bill to be passed in Parliament. The vote seemed to be there. But unless Turnbull allows his party MPs a free vote, something the PM has resolutely refused to do, it's anyone's guess if and when Australia will open civil marriage to its same-gender couples. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis.
This is Janice Ian.
You're listening to This Way Out.
You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
As a 13-year-old queer, black, homeless runaway on the streets of Chicago, Cece McDonald had no idea who she really was. But by her early 20s, she was an out-and-proud trans woman living in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and helping others turn their lives around. Refusing to become a victim, she was labeled a killer, only to become a folk hero. McDonald told This Way Out's Steve Pride about the worst night of her life, how she came back from it, and what her story says about racism, transphobia, and the prison industrial complex.
Take me back to the night of June 5th, 2011.
We were walking down the street. We had first been approached by a cop who said that there was a complaint of us being too loud. We were walking down the street. How are we too loud? It was a Saturday night, and Schooners was like a couple of feet away.
Schooners is a bar.
Yeah, Schooners is where everything happened in front of. Once you get to Schooners, beyond that point, it's nothing but businesses and bars and restaurants and things like that. And I was going to the grocery store. Me and my boyfriend, we kind of trail back to like talk about some things. So that left three people walking ahead of us. Probably 5 minutes after we started talking, my friends were walking, and then they began to walk back. Then I seen the other party yelling at them. I couldn't hear really what was being said until I got closer. When I did get closer, reality set in for me in a way that I wasn't expecting it, especially the derogatory statements that were being made towards them. Things like, you nigger babies, you need to go back to Africa, you don't belong here, you're nothing but men with dresses, and we trick people, and we're chicks with dicks, and we only dress like this to trick men, and some other things. I think you can get the point. At this point in my life, I was just trying to be more rational, less violent. The whole time that I was being homeless and up until that point, which at that time I had already moved into my apartment.
And you were in school, right?
Yeah.
And fashion?
Yes. And I felt like I was in a pretty content place in my life. I wouldn't say I was the happiest, but I was definitely content to the point where I knew that I was comfortable. I now have my place, so I can work on fixing my place up. And I was allowing some of my friends to stay there so they can get on their feet. And I was just, you know, a little house mom or whatever. And I had to get some cat food. And my cousin wanted to get some food because she wanted to cook for the people of the house. My friends Star and Zay, they wanted to go to the 90s. I'm pretty sure you know about the 90s, downtown Minneapolis.
Yeah.
So we all were headed the same way. And my boyfriend even decided to come with me. But back to the incident itself, argument kind of ensued after that, because once my boyfriend heard what was being said, he got really upset. And I was like, babe, let's just go. Like, it's not important. These people are clearly drunk. They were drinking outside of the bar, which by law is illegal. And also, there's a history of racist attacks there. When I was in jail, I've met some men of color who have been to that bar and was like, yes, I've had similar experiences of being called a nigger, being kicked out of the bar for retaliating against the racism and things like that.
And we're not talking Coke cups. They were outside with bottles. They were outside with glassware.
Molly Flaherty, who was the person who initially attacked me, had a glass tumbler that she still had liquor in. That's how she caught me off guard. The last words I can remember her saying is, I can take all of you bitches on. She threw her drink in my face. Then she smashed her glass in my face. I couldn't see what her next move was, because once she threw the liquor in my eyes, it was burning. And then I started to feel like this really, really, really sharp, stinging pain. And I'm like, this isn't just my eyes. I knew she hit me, but I didn't know that she hit me with something. I was getting lightheaded, and like the way that she hit me, it's a scar that's still there. I had to get 12 stitches in my face. And then I just got attacked. They all attacked me. She attacked me. She was grabbing me by my hair. She was trying to yank me to the ground. And from like dance and other like cheerleading, one thing I learned was how to plant my feet. And so she couldn't pull me down to the ground. So some of the other people tried to jump in and help her. And then that's when my friends and family jumped in. And it turned into a melee, as they say. Mind you, there were people literally standing around watching the whole fight. There were witnesses, because there were people who gave testimony to the investigators. So to have these people just stand around and see this happen, to have been enjoying these people attacking us, then people from inside the bar was coming out and challenging us. And I told this to the investigators. There were people who weren't even connected to that group who was trying to fight us and didn't care that I was bleeding, didn't care that I was injured. One person even tried to grab me from the driver's side of their vehicle while they're driving past after the fight had broken up. So many components of that story that were kind of left out, that people don't understand why I was in the state of mind that I was, then began to become outnumbered. And that's why they left before I did, because they were just like, CeCe, come on. And they knew that it was starting to get serious and that all of these people could attack us. I'm still dealing with the pain of what just happened to me. I'm trying to run. And then they began to scream, CeCe, come on. And at the same time, CeCe turned around and I see Dean and he's coming after me. And I'm trying to walk backwards, but trying to get as close to them as possible. And it just seemed like they were so, so far away.
This is Steve Pride, and I'm talking to CC McDonald. Where were the police then?
The police still haven't been called, and mind you, I just told you about how the police stopped us earlier for a noise complaint, and the police station was right across the street. It was just really, really frustrating that nobody was trying to help us. Nobody was trying to stop these people from attacking us. No one even tried to stop Dean from re-pursuing the fight and chasing after me. This person was intentionally trying to get me, and he didn't care how he was going to get me. During the fight, he was literally hurling full beer bottles, and he was aiming for my head. It was frightening. Why wouldn't I be in the state of mind to protect myself, especially after seeing this man trying to do serious damage to me? These aren't empty beer bottles. These are full beer bottles, and that's scary to think of how much damage that would do to me.
You really didn't have a weapon with you. You had your fashion right, person, you exactly. had scissors in your
and
purse.
I hate that the way that the media portrayed it, as in if I had like a butcher knife in my purse and that I was this crazed murderer that they finally caught. I did what any person would do in a situation like that, was defend themselves. Mind you, I'm only 5'7". This man was like 6'3", 6'4", a good 220, 230. How can I fight him? I just been smashed in the face with a cup. I've been jumped by a group of people.
And he's not calming down.
No, he wasn't calming down. And somebody even made a statement about how he was shuffling his feet like he was a boxer. Like, I remember all of that. I remember him trying to, like, knock my block off and him threatening me and a lot of the language that he used that wasn't allowed in court. Him calling me a black bitch and him steady calling me bitches and, you know, even to the point when he got stabbed and he said, "You stabbed me, bitch." And I didn't think that a person that was seriously harmed would say something to me like that. And that's why I didn't know that the stab wound was as serious as it was. Because who says something like, "You stabbed me, bitch," after they get stabbed? And I just was like, yes, I did. Because I had to protect myself. And now that I think about it, I don't take any of that back. They tried to make me feel bad for saying, "Yes, I did," after he just said, "You stabbed me, bitch." It wasn't intentional. I warned him that I had the scissors. When I initially pulled them out, I said, "I have a weapon and I will use it." And he still decided to attack me.
Well, when the police came, you didn't run. You were across the street in the
parking
lot.
Yeah, I crossed
the
street. I didn't know at that point what had happened because we were in a part of the parking lot where you can't see anything, but it was only probably 100 feet away from the bar.
How did they treat you when they came up?
The first thing that they did when they got out their car was drew their guns. Then they handcuffed me. They put me in the back of the squad car, mind you. I'm still bleeding.
Did they ever acknowledge you as a victim?
No. Never, not once.
They had a scenario already in their mind they were trying to fit you into.
Hi, I'm Krishan McDonald, a.k.a. CC McDonald, and you're listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all diverse communities.
Tell me about your prison experience.
I got sentenced June 4th, 2012.
And you took a plea deal.
Yes, I took a plea deal because at that point, I just figured that there was no way that I was going to beat murder charges in a jury that was majority white. It was kind of hard knowing what was going to happen to me. But I tell people all the time, like, I'd rather have dead 41 months than 41 years. And when I initially got to prison, the first thing they did was throw me in solitary confinement.
For your own protection.
Yeah, prison policies around trans and queer and gender.
And we're not talking Orange is the New Black here. You went to a men's prison.
Exactly. But it wouldn't matter what prison I went to, that I would still endure the same type of treatments. And it's because it's based off of gender binary that I was going to still have to deal with the racism or the sexism or the violence. If I wasn't going to get shanked by a white person in the men's prison, I could have got shanked by a white person in the women's prison, right? There would have been no safety for me in either space. It doesn't matter what prison I went to. I hate that I had to experience that. And 2.2 million people have to experience it, the prison population in general. So
you've become a real prison abolitionist?
Abolitionist. I'm very against the existence of prisons. You have those that believe in prison reform, and I'm totally against that. that also. I just feel like there are ways in which we can handle a society that doesn't capitalize, because it's all about capitalism, that doesn't capitalize off the bodies of those who have been criminalized and demonized and prosecuted in a way in which they keep continuing to be put into these systems.
I want to jump to your release. You had so much support to get you out of there. Uh-huh. Did that surprise you, how big the movement became?
It did, actually. I didn't understand why people cared about my story. I knew that there were so many cases like mine of women who went through what I went through. And also at that time was when the Trayvon Martin case happened and when the Marissa Alexander case happened. People made comparisons of our cases and really seeing how certain laws are only beneficial for certain people in society. I think that's what drove people even harder, was that they were seeing these things in the public gaze and people were beginning to see the system. Some people say it's broken, and it's not broken. It's doing exactly what it's created to do, to target the marginalized people, to target people of color, to target the LGBTQI community. But as far as this, for me, I was definitely shocked knowing that trans women have died because of this, that trans women are in prison right now because of this. And I began to have this guilt factor for myself, knowing that I had all of this support and that so many people like me don't get it. And I think that's what also drive me to do the work that I do, because I want to be the voice for those who can't have a voice, who's behind bars and can't have that voice or have that platform or have that support.
This has been a conversation with Cece McDonald. She was released from prison in 2014 after serving 19 months of her 41-month sentence. Today, Cece is not just a survivor, she's a leader. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Michael LeBeau, Sarah Sweeney, and Steve Pride contributed program material with thanks to Greg Louganis and Janice Ian. Mariah Carey performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener supporters, who all make this program possible. Check out the latest show information, special offers, mugshots of the crew, and more at thiswayout.org. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WHAV Haverhill, Massachusetts, to CCC Gosford, New South Wales, KRFC Fort Collins, Colorado, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.